The Holy Gospel according to Mark, the first chapter.
Glory to you, Lord.
As soon as Jesus and the disciples left the synagogue, they entered the house of Simon and Andrew with James and John. Now Simon's mother-in-law was in bed with a fever, and they told him about her at once. Jesus came and took her by the hand and lifted her up. Then the fever left her, and she began to serve them. That evening at sundown, they brought to Jesus all who were sick or possessed with demons, and the whole city was gathered around the door. And he cured many who were sick with various diseases and cast out many demons, and he would not permit the demons to speak because they knew him. In the morning, while it was very dark, Jesus got up and went out to a deserted place, and there he prayed. And Simon and his companions hunted for him. When they found him, they said to him, "Everyone is searching for you." Jesus answered, "Let us go to the neighboring towns, so that I may proclaim the message there also, for that is what I came to do." And he went throughout Galilee, proclaiming the message in their synagogues and casting out demons. The Gospel of the Lord. Praise
to you, O Christ.
Please be seated. Well, I want to take a brief second and take you back to a scary time. I want you to think of the first time that you had to get up in front of people and say something. It's okay, John. You don't have to live in this memory for very long, I promise you. Maybe it was giving a class presentation or a report on something. Maybe it was describing a project you did of some kind. Maybe it was, like me, I remember giving a prayer or a little sermon at church. The first time I remember getting up and speaking in front of many, many people was when my youth director asked me to be a part of a sermon when I was in middle school. And I laugh now about now going through preaching classes in seminary because as I remember, I did two things that were on my preaching professor's wrong list. And I remember as this like middle schooler, I did what my professor would call the nervous preacher rock. And that was kind of this. So, you know, I'm just giving my sermon this way. And if you ever notice new pastors, they definitely have the preacher rock, right? And also, I was so nervous that I would say something wrong, that I had this like hand in front of me as I was thinking, and nobody could understand me the whole time. And in fact, my youth director had to lovingly come in and ask me to remove my hand so that people could understand what I was saying. Speaking in front of people, for most of us, is terrifying, I think, because we want to say the right things, right? And I think that this nervousness of saying the right thing has entered into our church life as well. I've had multiple people come into my office through the years and ask a common question in relation to, you know, someone they know who has died or has an illness or a personal challenge. They ask, "What do I say?" And you know, it's interesting in the Gospel of Mark, which is the shortest of all of the four Gospels. It's actually 40% shorter than the longest Gospel, Gospel of John. And Jesus doesn't say a lot in Mark. He doesn't orate this ridiculously long sermon on I am the bread of life, like he does in the Gospel of John, or he doesn't preach the endless list of beatitudes in the Sermon on the Mount in the Gospel of Matthew. As we've been talking about in our Bible study, Jesus is constantly on the move in Mark. And he is on the move, surprisingly, with little or no words. Take, for example, this healing story that we have in our gospel text this morning with Simon's mother-in-law. Have you noticed here that Jesus doesn't say anything in this story? Instead, he just goes to her. It says, he, Jesus, came and took her by the hand and lifted her up. Then the fever left her and she began to serve them. Instead of, you know, standing over her and saying some profound, magical, godly words, Jesus just goes and sits with her and takes her hand. You know, some of the most profound and moving hospital visits I ever remember doing as a hospital chaplain are when I was witnessing intimate touch between patient and partner or spouse or friend or family member. I remember this one gentleman who was having a blood transfusion due to the fact that he had cancer, and his 10-year-old daughter holding his hand through the entire thing. I'm so grateful for you, I remember him saying. And then he joked, at the very least, you can help my blood pressure go down so this thing goes faster. Many times, the power of appropriate, intimate touch and presence can be much more life-changing, I think, than a bunch of words. And what's so interesting in Mark, and sorry, my Bible geek is coming out here, and as I've told the Bible study many times, that in Mark, there's this great passing on of hints through the entire story. Think of it as like breadcrumbs that the gospel writer leaves for the reader along the pathway. I think where it says he lifted her up is a breadcrumb that Mark has left for us. Egiro, which can be translated as to lift up, to raise, or to resurrect. At the end of Mark, when Mary and the disciples peer into the tomb and run into a man who has a white cloth, and this man says, "Do not be alarmed, you are looking for Jesus of Nazareth, who was crucified and has now been egiroed, resurrected." It's the same word. He came to her, took her by the hand, and resurrected her. Cynthia Bridge Kittredge, president of the Seminary of the Southwest in Austin, Texas, writes in a commentary, "The healing of Peter's mother-in-law, I believe, is the first resurrection story in the Gospel of Mark. Perhaps all it takes is sitting and taking one by the hand for one to be resurrected." But I think this story goes beyond just healing and being raised. I want to address a little bit of the elephant in the room with what happens after this woman's resurrection, and that the fever left her and she began to serve them. Oh, thank God. I'm glad after a life-threatening fever, she was able to serve Jesus a sandwich. So keep in mind, right? The Gospel of Mark was written in a very patriarchal time, a male-oriented society. And I don't want to explain away some of these challenging verses here too much. But with that being said, diakoneo is the Greek word, or to serve. It could also, I think, be one of these little breadcrumbs that the author of the Gospel of Mark leaves for us. Because at the end, again, of Mark chapter 15 and verses 40 and 41, as Jesus' body is hanging on the cross, it reads, "There were also women looking on from a distance. Among them were Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of James and the younger, and of Joses and Salome. They followed him and diakoneoed and served him when he was in Galilee." I think Mark is getting at something that goes way beyond serving Jesus food. Serving in this context is being a disciple. Serving here is proclaiming the good news of Jesus Christ. And so I think in this reading, one could actually argue that this is the first time that diakoneoed is used by Mark, one could argue that this woman isn't just resurrected in this story, but this woman also becomes the very first disciple of Jesus. She got it. Through Jesus's plain old just sitting with her and taking her hand, she was inspired to serve. That's what it's all about, right? Now, I know those of us who have some Lutheran Scandinavian heritage, like me, like to make fun of ourselves as shy and quiet. And we simply don't have in our Lutheran tradition very loud, preachy televangelists. We don't have a history of a large, great awakening moments. But you know what? Maybe that is okay. Maybe discipleship isn't based on the words you say, but the life and presence that you lead. You know, what's also interesting about Jesus' ministry in Mark is that almost all of it, now feeding the 5,000 aside, is done one person at a time. So maybe Jesus here is giving us yet one more breadcrumb. Going face to face, healing, teaching, being present with one person at a time. Maybe the good news of Jesus Christ is more about than being present with someone face to face and less about mass conversion. Maybe one can model more resurrection in the holding of another's hand than an entire sermon series. Words matter, yes, they definitely do. But resurrection, thank God, is not solely based on words. May our church live then more deeply into resurrecting others through our appropriate touch, through our presence, and through our discipleship. Amen.